Chapter 64, David Flees. After the slaying of Goliath, Saul kept David with him and would not permit him to return to his father's house. And the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. Jonathan and David made a covenant to be united as brethren, and the king's son stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garment, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. Yet David preserved his modesty and won the affection of the people as well as of the royal household. It was evident that the blessing of God was with him. Saul felt that the kingdom would be more secure if there could be connected with him one who received instruction from the Lord. David's presence might be a protection to Saul when he went out with him to war. The providence of God had connected David with Saul. David's position at court would give him a knowledge of affairs and would enable him to gain the confidence of the nation. Hardships which befell him through the enmity of Saul would lead him to feel his dependence upon God. And the friendship of Jonathan was also of God's providence, to preserve the life of the future ruler of Israel. When Saul and David were returning from battle with the Philistines, the women came out of all cities of Israel, singing and dancing, to meet King Saul, with tabrets, with joy, and with instruments of music. One company sang, "Saul hath slain his thousands," while another company responded, "And David his ten thousands." The king was angry because David was exalted above himself. In place of subduing envious feelings, he exclaimed, "They have ascribed unto David ten thousands, and to me they have ascribed but thousands, and what can he have more but the kingdom?" Saul's love of approbation had a controlling influence over his actions and thoughts. His standard of right and wrong was popular applause. Saul's ambition was to be first in the estimation of men. A settled conviction entered the mind of the king that David would obtain the heart of the people and reign in his stead. The demon of jealousy enters Saul's heart. Saul opened his heart to the spirit of jealousy by which his soul was poisoned. The king of Israel was opposing his will to the will of the Infinite One. He allowed his impulses to control his judgment until he was plunged into a fury of passion. He had paroxysms of rage, when he was ready to take the life of any who dared to oppose his will. From this frenzy he would pass into despondency and self-contempt, and remorse would take possession of his soul. He loved to hear David play upon his harp, and the evil spirit seemed to be charmed away for the time. But one day when the youth was bringing sweet music from his instrument, accompanying his voice as he sang the praises of God, Saul suddenly threw his spear at the musician. David was preserved by God and fled from the rage of the maddened king. As Saul's hatred of David increased, he became more and more watchful to find an opportunity to take his life, but none of his plans against the anointed of the Lord were successful. David trusted in him who is strong to deliver. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and David's prayer was that he might walk before God in a perfect way. The people were not slow to see that David was a competent person. Affairs entrusted to his hand were managed with wisdom and skill. The counsels of the young man were safe to follow, while the judgment of Saul was at times unreliable. Saul stood in fear of him, since it was evident the Lord was with him. The king deemed that the life of David cast reproach upon him, since by contrast it presented his own character to disadvantage. Envy made Saul miserable. What untold mischief has this evil trait worked in our world? Envy is the offspring of pride, and if it is entertained in the heart, it will lead eventually to murder. The king kept watch, hoping to find some occasion of indiscretion that might serve as an excuse to take the young man's life and still be justified before the nation for his evil act. He laid a snare, urging David to war against the Philistines with still greater vigor, promising as a reward the eldest daughter of the royal house. To this proposal David's modest answer was, "Who am I? And what is my life, or my father's family in Israel? that I should be son-in-law to the king. The monarch manifested his insincerity by wedding the princess to another. Michal, Saul's youngest daughter, was offered the young man on condition that evidence be given of the slaughter of a specified number of their foes. Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines, but David returned a victor from the battle, to become the king's son-in-law. Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David, and the monarch, enraged, was still more assured that this was the man whom the Lord had said was better than he and who should reign in his place. Throwing off all disguise, he issued a command to the officers of the court to take the life of the one he hated. Jonathan presented before the king what David had done to preserve the honor and life of the nation, and what terrible guilt would rest upon the murderer of the one whom God had used to scatter their enemies. The conscience of the king was touched. And Saul swore, "As the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain." David was brought to Saul, and he ministered in his presence as in the past. David leads victorious army. Again war was declared, and David led the army against their enemies. A great victory was gained by the Hebrews, and the people praised his wisdom and heroism. This served to stir up the former bitterness of Saul against him. While the young man was playing, filling the palace with sweet harmony, Saul's passion overcame him and he hurled a javelin at David, but the angel of the Lord turned aside the deadly weapon. David escaped and fled to his own house. Saul sent spies that they might take him in the morning and put an end to his life. Michal informed David of the purpose of her father. She urged him to flee and let him down from the window to make his escape. He fled to Samuel at Ramah, where the prophet welcomed the fugitive. It was here, amid the hills, that the honored servant of the Lord continued his work. A company of seers with him studied closely the will of God and listened reverently to the words of instruction that fell from the lips of Samuel. David learned precious lessons from the teacher of Israel. But David's connection with Samuel aroused the jealousy of the king, lest the prophet lend his influence to the advancement of Saul's rival. The king sent officers to bring David to Gibeah, where he intended to carry out his murderous design. God restrains evil. The messengers went on their way intent upon taking David's life, but one greater than Saul controlled them. Met by unseen angels, they began to utter prophetic sayings and proclaim the glory of Jehovah. Thus God manifested his power to restrain evil. Saul was exasperated and sent other messengers. These also were overpowered by the Spirit of God, and united with the first in prophesying. The third embassage was sent by the king, but the divine influence fell upon them also, and they prophesied. Saul then decided that he himself would go. As soon as he should came within reach of David, he intended with his own hand to slay him, whatever the consequences. But an angel of God met him and the Spirit of God held him in its power. He went forward uttering prayers to God, with predictions and sacred melodies. When he came to the prophet's home in Ramah, he laid aside the outer garments that betokened his rank and lay before Samuel and his pupils under the influence of the divine spirit. The people were drawn together to witness this strange scene, and the experience of the king was reported far and wide. The persecutor assured David that he was at peace with him, but David had little confidence in the king's repentance. He longed to see his friend Jonathan once more. Conscious of his innocence, he sought the king's son and made a touching appeal, "What have I done? What is mine iniquity? And what is my sin before thy father, that he seeketh my life?" Jonathan believed that his father no longer intended to take the life of David. "God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing either great or small, but that he will show it me, and why should my father hide his thing from me? It is not so." After the remarkable exhibition of the power of God, Jonathan could not believe that his father would harm David. This would be rebellion against God. David hides from Saul. But David was not convinced. he declared to Jonathan, "As the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death." At the time of the new moon, a sacred festival was celebrated in Israel. It was expected that both David and Jonathan would appear at the king's table. But David feared to be present, and it was arranged that he visit his brothers in Bethlehem. On his return he was to hide in a field not far from the banqueting hall, for 3 days absenting himself from the presence of the king. Jonathan would note the effect upon Saul. If no angry demonstration were made by the king, then it would be safe for David to return to court. When the place was vacant the second day the king questioned, "Wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meat, neither yesterday nor today?" And Jonathan answered Saul, "David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem, and he said, Let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there, and now, if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table." When Saul heard these words, his anger was ungovernable. He declared that as long as David lived, Jonathan could not come to the throne. David should be sent for immediately, that he might be put to death. Jonathan again pleaded, "Wherefore shall he be slain? What hath he done?" This only made the king more satanic in his fury, and the spear intended for David he now hurled at his own son. The prince was grieved and indignant. Leaving the royal presence, he repaired at the appointed time to the spot where David was to learn the king's intentions. They wept bitterly. The dark passion of the king cast its shadow upon the young men, and their grief was too intense for expression. Jonathan's last words fell upon the ear of David as they separated, "Go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, The Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever." David hastened to reach Nob. The tabernacle had been taken to this place from Shiloh, and here Ahimelech the high priest ministered. The priest looked upon David in astonishment, as he came in haste and apparently alone. He inquired what had brought him there. The young man in his extremity resorted to deception. David told the priest he had been sent by the king on a secret errand. David's faith fails. Here he manifested a want of faith in God, and his sin resulted in the death of the high priest. Had the facts been plainly stated, Ahimelech would have known what course to pursue to preserve his life. God requires that truthfulness mark his people, even in the greatest peril. Doeg, chief of Saul's herdsmen, was paying his vows in the place of worship. At the sight of this man, David determined to make haste to secure another place of refuge. He asked Ahimelech for a sword and was told that he had none except the sword of Goliath, kept as a relic in the tabernacle. David replied, "There is none like that, give it me." David fled to Achish, king of Gath, for he felt that there was more safety in the midst of the enemies of his people than in the dominions of Saul. But it was reported to Achish that David was the man who had slain the Philistine champion years before. Now he who had sought refuge with the foes of Israel found himself in great peril. But, feigning madness, he deceived his enemies and thus made his escape. The first error of David was his distrust of God at Nob, his second, his deception before Achish. As trial came upon him, his faith was shaken and human weakness appeared. He saw in every man a spy and a betrayer. As he had been hunted and persecuted, perplexity and distress had nearly hidden his heavenly Father from his sight. Every failure on the part of the children of God is due to their lack of faith. When shadows encompass the soul, we must look up, there is light beyond the darkness. David ought not to have distrusted God. He was the Lord's anointed. If he had but removed his mind from the distressing situation in which he was placed and had thought of God's power and majesty, he would have been at peace even in the midst of the shadows of death. Among the mountains of Judah, David sought refuge. He made good his escape to the cave of Adullam, a place that with a small force could be held against a large army. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. The family of David could not feel secure, knowing that at any time the unreasonable suspicions of Saul might be directed against them on account of their relation to David. They had now learned what was coming to be generally known in Israel, that God had chosen David as the future ruler of his people. They believed that they would be safer with him. In the cave of Adullam, the family were united in sympathy and affection. The son of Jesse could make melody with voice and harp. He had tasted the bitterness of distrust on the part of his own brothers, and the harmony that had taken the place of discord brought joy to the exile's heart. Many had lost confidence in the ruler of Israel, for they could see that he was no longer guided by the Spirit of the Lord. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented, resorted to David, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. Here David had a little kingdom of his own, and in it order and discipline prevailed. But he was far from secure, for he received continual evidence that the king had not relinquished his murderous purpose. At a warning of danger from a prophet of the Lord, he fled from his hiding place to the forest of Herath. God was giving David a course of discipline to fit him to become a wise general, as well as a just and merciful king. Saul had been preparing to ensnare David in the cave of Adullam, and when it was discovered that David had left this place of refuge, the king was enraged. The flight of David was a mystery. Had traitors in his camp informed the son of Jesse of his design? King Saul orders a terrible massacre. Saul affirmed to his counselors that a conspiracy had been formed against him, and with the offer of rich gifts and honor he bribed them to reveal who among his people had befriended David. Doeg the Edomite turned informer. Moved by ambition and avarice and by hatred of the priest who had reproved his sins, Doeg reported David's visit to Ahimelech in such a light as to kindle Saul's anger against the man of God. Maddened with rage, he declared that the whole family of the priest should perish. Not only Ahimelech, but the members of his father's house, 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod were slain at the king's command by the murderous hand of Doeg. This is what Saul could do under the control of Satan. This deed filled all Israel with horror. It was the king whom they had chosen that had committed this outrage. The ark was with them, but the priests of whom they had inquired were slain with the sword. What would come next?